5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is, I don't know when it is, to be honest. Yes, it is. It's 18th of April already. I don't know what the name is for the word. There's probably a special word for the day before Good Friday, but it's the day before Good Friday, and it is the new Panic Room episode 139, and it's all very exciting because I have to get up early in the morning to get the kids to school for a start. So I can stay up really late tonight, which is nice. And it's also exciting because I do get to chat to my old we don't talk that often, probably because she can't stand me, but we sort of put aside our differences and put on a brave facade for a Thursday evening for an hour and a half, which is kind of jolly. But we're gonna bring her on.
I'm doing really good, and I wanted to say that you're like one of my favorite people. That's what I'm supposed to say, right? Is that what you?
Yeah, I think that was in the script.
Yeah.
But I think it's because I have it playing that music now. I can't help it. It wouldn't be a show without it now. And you can smell the homemade bootleg distilleries and the meth labs, can't you? It puts you right there, and the donkeys.
It does. You know, if you go outside, you can hear the donkeys sometimes. You can hear them, really.
That's fantastic. I like that.
It is pretty cool. Yeah, I don't mind.
Well, you know, donkeys, isn't it? So how are you? I'm tired. I've had a long and sort of exhausting day today. I mean, how was your day? See, I think that's what it says on the script. You had a nap.
Yeah.
Well, I could have guessed at that, to be honest with you.
No, I had a nap. You know, I didn't get up until like noon, and you know, then I had a nap. So this is like my peak time right now.
I've been awake. To be fair, I didn't sleep for crap last night because we had thunderstorms. But it's not the thunderstorms that wakes up. It's the notification on the weather notifications on my phone. I think literally every half an hour it's been. But oh, for fuck, what is that? Oh, it's raining. I don't give a shit. It's 3 a.m. I'm in my bed. I don't give a fuck if it's raining. Thank you. But it was kind of worrying because we had a big thunderstorm this morning and there was a flash of light. And it sounded like a bomb going off, literally under my seat.
Oh, wow.
And then I got this notification on my app. Lightning has struck 0 miles from your location. So, I think he almost hit me. To be honest, it sounded like it literally under my seat. Yeah. It was just like, wow.
Oh, that's
that was pretty unpleasant. Yeah. Then it all sort of blew over, and it was, you know, the afternoon was quite jolly after that.
Huh.
So, Now, the consequence, I didn't sleep well last night. So I'm tired. I've got to, and after this, I've got to watch. I think I don't know if it's the penultimate or the finale of the Orville tonight.
Oh yay! I'm so excited.
I knew you would be. You can't wait. Yeah. You can't wait to rush off the air and sit and watch the Orville because it is awesome. It is awesome.
You know, yeah. I'm subjected to this wonderful show, and I hate to say that it's actually growing on me a little bit. But you know, it actually combines two of the things I probably hate. Well, okay, hate is a strong word, but dislike the most as far as TV goes. I'm not a fan of sci-fi, and I don't really like spoof shows, and that's got it's both of them. And
well, it's funny the season one, I think it started off as a bit of a spoof, and I think you know Seth was trying to put too much humor in it, and I think I enjoy it as a almost like as a continuation of the theme of the first Star Trek series, which, and I defy anybody to argue, is still the best. Mm-hmm. Although I did hear that they're bringing the Jean-Luc Picard, the Next Generation, back. That's having a bit of resurgence coming up. I think the season two, he's sort of eased back on trying to make it funny. It doesn't need to be funny. It's not a comedy. It is a damn good sci-fi. There's a few bits get a little bit preachy on some issues, you know, and it's almost like it's shouting it in your face with a megaphone, you know. This is about the gay issue! Yes, okay, yes, we've got that. Yeah. Thank you, Steph. Well done, mate. Well done. Yeah, we understand that. You know, because we've got these abortus and his partner.
Oh, I know.
And
he's so funny. I do.
He's pretty. I can't remember what's his partner's name? Crichton or something.
Yeah.
And they're both male, and they're both sort of big macho male sort of characters. But you know, they have this. But it tends to hammer home. They had another abortus episode just the other week.
Yeah, that was a good one, I thought.
It was him. Yes, I get it. Yeah, they don't have females. And females are second-class citizens. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's really pushing it a little bit for me. My favourite was the doctor lady having a mad passionate affair with the shiny robot man, which was...
Yes, that was interesting.
Interesting. I wanted to... I had too many questions... to be honest, for that, to really enjoy that. As a biologist, I just really needed to know probably more than the show was going to let on, but...
Yeah, definitely. I like the one where, and it was just like a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago or something, and I can't remember the guy's name. He's got the reddish hair or whatever. They discovered that cell phone. And he, you know,
that was good.
What's
his character's name? He's Scott Grimes is the actor. He also voices Steve in American Dad, because obviously a lot of American Dad and Family Guy actors pop up in this show. Is it Gordon? That was good, where they found the cell phone from sort of the 2000s, and he fell in. It was nice to see that take on, you know, like a futuristic take on today. They obviously got this top of the range smartphone. They looked at it like it was, you know, carved out of rock. That was imaginative. That worked. But again, I think that's probably been done on Star. There's a lot of the plot lines you can trace back to Star. Now, Big Star Trek fan of the original. I mean, Next Generation was all right. I do enjoy the movies, but you know, I it was Kirk and Spock and the gang for me. You know, I grew up watching those guys, so you know, sorry.
You know,
all
speaking
these
of Kirk and
keep bringing out new Star Treks. It's just these issues in the name. Stop that.
How about the new Twilight? Are you watching the new Twilight at all, or any thoughts on that?
Have I watched what?
The new Twilight, or Twilight Zone shows.
Twilight and Twilight Zone, two completely different things.
Yeah,
obviously.
They're two different things.
I don't know when the third episode is out. I've seen the first two of the new one. I enjoyed them. I really, and they've got some great actors in it. It's nicely written. And I like how they've got Jordan Peele is doing the narrator part, the Rod Serling part. And he does really well. They've really captured the spirit of the Twilight Zone for me. They did a resurgence back in the 1980s, and they have some big name directors. They had Spielberg, they had Landis, Joe Dante. They have some really big, you know, they were doing an episode each sort of thing. And they'd obviously thrown a lot of money at it, and there's big effects and all this. And it spoiled it. You know, the essence of the Twilight Zone was very much that it was done on a tiny budget, but it was about that it was effective. It was about the writing and the acting. And this new season have done that. The last one was Nightmare at 30,000 Feet, which has taken, obviously, their Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, but it was a different story. I thought, oh, they're not just going to remake the old Shatner. And again, it's a classic. But they had Adam Scott, and I'm a big, big fan of Adam Scott. He's great. And it had a nice spin on it, but it was done. It was obviously set in an airplane, and it was done. No big massive effects, but it worked so beautiful, you know. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I need to find out when the next one's going to be on, because I don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
So, we could waffle. Maybe we should. Maybe just tell the guests not to bother. We'll just waffle on about TV shows, I think, all evening. But funnily enough, I've been catching up on Young Sheldon, which I really, really enjoy that show. It's great. I'm not going to say I'm not quite that smart, but it reminds me of a lot of what I went through as a kid. You know, I was called, you know, Brainiac and Nerd and SWAT and all the rest of it, you know, and Professor. You know, just being a smart kid, it's good. It's dealt with incredibly well. And he also gets on very well with his Meemaw, his grandma, which I identify that. I think my grandma is probably the single biggest influence on my life. It's good. I enjoy it. And obviously with the Big Bang Theory finishing this season, you know, we're going to have our next fix.
Have to get caught up. I haven't seen any of that, and I'm a couple seasons behind on Big Bang. I mean, I don't think I've seen the last probably three seasons.
I'm on with that, yeah.
Yeah, the last one I saw was when the season finale, when Sheldon was going to, I think he proposes, doesn't he propose to Amy? Like he gets on a plane and he gets there and he says, "Wait, that's the last thing I've saw. That's the last thing I've seen." So
So you've missed. Yeah. Well, the last season was leading up to them getting married, and this last season now is they're married and moving forward, and they're up for a Nobel Prize at the moment. But it's good. So, are we just going to waffle all night, or do we have a show? I'm happy. I'm happy doing this, to be honest. Just waffle all night. Do we or do we not have a show?
We do have a show, and I'm really excited that we have returning guests again, because I think that just means we're doing something right. So both of our guests are returning. The first segment, we have crime fiction writer and publisher. No, sorry, wrong order. The our first author is
You have one job. One job.
I have them in the wrong order. That's all.
To be fair, it might not be. I might not be that we, you know, we're doing things. It could be. This could be like their community service. So, you know, don't get ideas about your station. Pick up litter by the side of the road in an orange jumpsuit, or go on the new panic. Oh, for God. Well, it's raining. It's raining, so we'll go on the show.
That's what it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have horror author Tony Knighton on the show, and in the second segment we'll have crime fiction writer and publisher Tom Vader, both returning guests, which I think is awesome. Yeah.
They are. So, hey, let's, without further ado, and I love saying that, why don't you introduce our first guest then?
Okay,
if you want. If you don't want to join in, Xtina, just say, and I'll do the show by myself. It's entirely up to you. Entirely up to you.
Our first guest is horror author Tony Knighton. Woo!
Hello.
Hey there, Christina. Hey, James. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Good, Tony. How are you? So good to speak to you again. It's been a while. How are you?
Yes, it has. Oh, I'm doing swell.
Excellent. Swell. I love that. I'm a swell. So it's been, it must be at least a year since we last had you on the show. What have you been up to?
Same stuff. I'm still working, still writing, still fighting fire. You know, nothing real new.
Oh.
How about you guys?
Much, you know, much the same. We're doing this every Thursday night and working ourselves to death. So, well, I am. Xtina naps a lot, basically.
Yes, I nap. You
work. She spends a lot of the time asleep. So, and
I'm
jealous. I wish I could sleep. Actually, I sort of on the go from stupid old clock and still on the go and yeah. But Tony is here to talk to us about his book, A Few Days Away. According to Xtina's notes, it does not have a tagline. Probably she couldn't have bothered to write one in here. So, Tony, tell us a bit more about A Few Days Away, sir.
Well, it's the book I've been working on since since the publication of my last book, 3 Hours Past Midnight. It was published by Crimewave Press, who is, you know, commanded and run by your next guest, Tom Vader. He's my publisher.
Oh, and, right, cool. Best behavior.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have to make a correction. I'm much more of a crime writer than I am a horror writer. I've my stuff tends to be dark, and I have written a couple of horror stories, but most of my work is crime fiction.
So, okay. All right.
Hence my publication by Crime Wave Press.
A bit of a giveaway there. Yes. Yes, that works.
Yeah. So anyway, I first wrote this character in a short story in my first book, a collection called Happy Hour and Other Philadelphia Cruelties. And he appeared in a story called Mr. Wonderful. And I liked the guy a lot. And he managed to survive that first story. And I thought I'd really like to do something else with him. And I'd had this idea of a robbery that should take place because the victim really needed robbing. Without going into great detail, this man needed to be robbed, and so that was the jumping off point for my last novel, 3 Hours Past Midnight. And I still like the guy, so I'm doing something else with him now.
Oh,
and,
fantastic!
Yeah, and a few weeks ago happened on, I've been working on it for a long time without a title, and I realized a good title for it would be A Few Days Away, for a couple of reasons. So that's what I've been doing.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, if I remember right, your day job, you're a cab driver, is that correct?
No, I'm a firefighter here in Philadelphia.
Firefighter. I'm sorry. I knew it involved driving. So are you still on with that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm still working, still fighting fire.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I had my brother-in-law, he used to do crash fire rescue, and I don't know. I just think it's such a noble job it is, and I don't know. And hot. It's going to be really hot.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's a nice compliment, but you have to keep in mind that we have a lot of fun too. So, we all kind of.
Well, you know, you got that bull,
so.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been a fireman for 34 years now.
Wow. Wow.
That's
I can't
awesome.
Imagine.
I mean, I've always wondered. Last minute, I mean, sort of. I mean, how many you know fires do you, would you sort of tackle in a say in a week or a month? I mean, is it sort of one every night or?
No. It depends on where you're working. I'm getting along, as they say, and I work in my own. For the first time in my career, I work in my own neighborhood, and I walk to work, and it's kind of a sleepy part of town, so we aren't as active as I was, say, in the 80s and 90s. But in the 80s, a couple of times, we fought four house fires in one night. It's a funny, I mean, the job's funny because in the busiest of places, you can go for a stretch without doing anything at all, and then all of a sudden, you're just out all night. You're just doing stuff all night, you know,
yeah.
all day and all night. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. You, the bell rings and you never know. So, but I like it. So I still enjoy the work.
Excellent. Oh, that's good. That's good. I mean, are you close to retire? I mean, will you retire one day or just keep going?
Well, I know I'm closer to the end than I am the beginning. I've had the paperwork twice, and I chickened out both times. I sort of have a vague plan, but I'm not a good planner, you know. I always figured that I would know when it was time,
mm-hmm.
and it just isn't time yet. I probably was dropped on my head a few times. It probably should be time, but I still enjoy it. So, you know,
why not keep
doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously you're still, you know, you're writing, you know, you're still, you plan to carry on with that?
Oh yeah. Oh sure. I do.
You're never going to quit. That's good. It's one of those things. Funny, I don't think writers ever retire. You know, we sort of.
No,
exactly.
Of course not.
Just keep going.
Of course not.
Just keep going. We never stop.
Yeah.
I can't see me ever. You know, even as you know, as old as I'm getting, I can't. I can't see that. I think the idea is sort of. They sort of pile up in your head. if you don't get them out, they just drive you insane.
Sure.
Speaking of writing, I want to hear more about A Few Days Away. Do you have an excerpt for us, Tony?
Yes, I do. It's, shall I read it now?
You go for it. Yes.
You sure?
The airwaves. Okay. If you want to set up the excerpt for us, if you need to set that up, go ahead.
It doesn't need a lot of setup. He's returning to the scene of an old crime where the money that he stole got lost, but never made its way back to the bank, and he had to abscond. But he figures somebody's got it, and he'd like to go get it. So he's on his way there, and I'll start now. I drove west on Ridge. The antenna farm was visible above the horizon for a stretch, long black lines drawn against a gray sky. Once past the city into White Marsh Township, the road changed designation from an avenue to a pike and widened to four lanes. On either side were houses and commercial buildings and businesses like car dealers, but the road was also fronted by long stretches of green open land. It got more built up the closer I got to Norristown. Just beyond the big five-point intersection at Chemical Road was an overpass. Low in the distance, I saw a long-idled steel mill property. Once inside the borough, the road changed names again, this time to Main Street, and more closely resembled a densely occupied, aging urban arterial. I traveled through the district business district, past the Montgomery County Courthouse, and a few blocks later turned toward the river. I parked just off an intersection, two blocks in, and approached an address in an unbroken row of shabby three-story brick houses. Some porch fronts sagged, and there were slates missing from the common mansard. I climbed the steps and knocked. Parsons opened the door partway and squinted against the light. "Hey." T-shirt stood out against his dark complexion. He let me in and closed the door behind us. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust. I hadn't seen him in over a year. He was a big man, but appeared to have lost weight. The undershirt bagged about his middle. He led me into the kitchen, scuffling along in a pair of slippers. The curtains were drawn here, too, but these were lighter and gave everything a sickly yellowish tint. He said, "I think I have what you want. Something you can carry?" "Yeah, something small." I could smell liquor on his breath. "It can't be obvious." He nodded and opened the door to the basement. It wasn't like him to drink at all, let alone during the day. I didn't like it. I followed him down the steps. Something was different about the house, too, but I wasn't sure what. He pulled open the bottom drawer of an old metal desk. "This is a clean piece. Girl I know picked it up last month in the city. Personal protection. Parsons used straw buyers. People without a record who could go to gun shops and make legal purchases. He was quiet and careful, and it was reasonable to assume that others he dealt with would be too. He showed me the pistol. Glock 43, subcompact automatic, 9mm, 6-round magazine, made to be carried under a jacket," he looked up, "or in a purse." Despite his mood, his thick brown fingers moved skillfully over the weapon. He released the magazine, cleared the chamber, and laid the pistol on an oil-stained towel. "You want to test it?" "No need. Do you have ammo?" It took an effort, but he smiled at the compliment. "Sure." The house was quiet. Usually music would be playing here, the radio or a record. Parsons walked across the room to some shelves and said, "You want a holster for it?" "No." I understood what was different. The house didn't smell of cigarettes. "Where's Olivia?" He fiddled with something on the shelf. "She passed." He motioned toward his chest. "Cancer." "I'm sorry." "Just to say something," I said. "How long was she sick?" "Diagnosed 8 months ago. They gave her treatments, radiation, but it was just, you know, to make her feel better." "Palliative?" "Yeah," he turned. "That's the word. Only one of her kids came to the service, her youngest boy, Jamar. I needed to move this along, but said, sons miss their mothers," and pointed to the Glock. "How much?" "That's you, all right. Always the professional." I waited for him. He finally said, 9 will do. I'll throw in a box of cartridges." He turned back to the shelf for them. I counted out 9 $100 bills on the desktop and took the pistol and ammunition. I considered suggesting that he give up the business for a while, that it might not be good for him to stay closed up in a dark house full of weapons. But he already knew that. I said thanks and left. And I'll stop there.
Stop! No, you can't stop there. No. I was enjoying that. Yeah, you guys always do that. You know, we need to get somebody else to just read everything.
Oh, yeah,
I know.
You read it well as well. I could, exactly. I could listen to you read all night. That was brilliant. I enjoyed that.
Oh, good.
The funny thing is that normally I read along while they're reading, so I kind of know when they're going to stop. And this time I was just, you know, I had my eyes closed and I was listening, and then he just stopped. And I was like, well, you can't stop there. So that was good.
I was enjoying that. That was brilliant. That was brilliant. Is that book actually, is it out now? Is it due out shortly or?
No, I'm still in the, I haven't finished it yet.
I mean,
in my head it's finished, but I haven't gotten it all on paper yet, and I don't have it all how I like it, so mm-hmm. I would like it to be. So I'm going to work on it for a while. And then, you know, then I'll send it out into the world. see what happens.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, when it's finished, you have to come back on the show and read more, because I was enjoying that. I was enjoying
oh, cool.
that. I just something just the style. I mean, the writing and the reading style was good. I enjoyed that. I want more next time. I'm going to campaign for more.
Yes.
But to be fair, we do have some authors on who, you know, they send us their snippet and it's like half a book. And no, just. As good as they are, half a book.
We do have
a lot of reading.
We have a listener who said the same thing. He said, "Dude, keep reading." So I just thought I would let you know that.
Yeah. Hey, she's just showing off that we have a listener, I think, to be honest. We actually got somebody
listening. Right, we have
Aim. That's at least, what, two now.
Wait a minute. You mean there's people listening to this?
Well, apparently two of them, yes. Two of them. Who'd have thunk it,
awesome.
Eh? Who'd have thunk it? Mm.
So, Tony, I don't know. I can't remember if I did this with you last time you were here, but would you like to do 11 questions with me?
Sure.
Yay, that was the right answer. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was saying, if you said no, it was tough, really, because we got to.
What would have happened if I said no?
We'd have done it anyway.
Right, I know.
With or without
you.
You
know, pretty much. Yeah. Somebody asked these questions with me.
I will warn you, though, she will judge you on your answers, so think very carefully about each one. So here we go.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure? Probably Rita's Water Ice, mango flavored.
Okay, that's an interesting.
I said,
I know that nobody outside of Philadelphia knows what water ice is.
I have no idea.
It's finely crushed ice with flavoring in it, and it's
kind of slushy then, like a Slurpee or something, right?
Shaved ice. It's not shaved ice. I know what that
uh-huh.
is, and I've seen it. And it's similar, but this is way better. And I think it was indigenous to the Philadelphia area forever and ever. And a retired fireman, actually has it up and down the East Coast now. And I forget what they call it in the South. They can't call it water ice because nobody would even try it. So he called it something else south of the Mason-Dixon line, but I can't remember what he called it. But that's my guilty pleasure, the mango flavor. And if you eat it too fast in the summer, it gives you a brain freeze, but it's just great stuff.
It sounds good.
It does,
okay,
yeah.
That's not too bad of a guilty pleasure. Cause I think mine would be like ice cream or something. So, you know, you're right on the right track there.
Yeah.
Number two, do you prefer the mountains or the ocean?
I'm going to say the ocean. Being from Philadelphia, we love the, you know, South Jersey, the Atlantic Ocean, the Jersey
mm-hmm.
Shore. Not the TV show, the Jersey Shore, but, you know.
Thank God.
I
wouldn't judge for that
Wildwood,
one.
You know, Ocean City, Cape May, those places.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. What's your favorite lunch meat?
Oh, man. For health reasons, I gave up eating meat a couple of years ago, but I love Lebanon bologna. And
what
I don't
kind
even know how to Lebanon
bologna.
And I don't even know how to describe it. I'm too much of a coward to have ever like tried to find out what's in it. But it's real spicy. It's good. Trust me, it's good stuff.
you know, one of our guests from last week mentioned the ham and cheese loaf, which I was like, oh my God, I remember that from when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure
I
it was
remember still, that too.
It wasn't really ham, it wasn't really cheese, but it was still good.
Yeah. Kind of disgusting, but it is good.
Yeah, exactly. And I love to follow up the question about lunch meat with, if it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
No, because I had to give up meat, you know. In a pinch, I probably would. Like, I think everybody says, like, yeah, if I really had to, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, if it was just, if it was socially acceptable and I didn't have to, I probably wouldn't. Because like I said, I had to give up meat, so, you know.
Right. Yeah, I would not. I think I would go hungry and starve first.
I would dig in at any opportunity. I may start eating the children tonight.
Well, you know, James, I'm not surprised.
No. I just seem like the sort of person who would eat people.
Yeah.
I know, right? That's great.
It's easy. Obviously, it's got me pegged, definitely.
Let's see, Tony, have you ever been pulled over for a traffic violation?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure.
More
times than I can count. I'm not a bad driver. I just, you know, it's usually the quality of the vehicles that I'm driving that leads officers to... I had a truck. I used to be a roofer on the side, and I had a truck that ran fine, but nothing worked. And one of my headlights I had held in place with ceiling wire, and if you hit a bump, all of a sudden you were like looking up in the trees, this truck was really bad, and I used to never take it out at night, but I was stuck on a job late, and I was on my way home, and the guy pulled me over, and I told the cop, I said, you know, I showed him my ID card, and I told him, I said, you know, I thought I had that taillight fixed. I'm sorry. And he started laughing. He said, taillight? You don't have anything working. He looked at my ID, and he said, you're a fireman? And I said, yeah. He says, look, just get out of here. Get out of here. Go away. And don't drive that truck anymore. And, you know, I promised them I'd go away, and you know, I did. But that's, I'm notorious for driving terrible vehicles, having driven terrible vehicles for most of my life, and I get pulled over for that.
Nice. Which is your favorite franchise, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
I'm going to go with Saw.
Really? Fine.
Yeah. And it's my
okay.
daughter, Anna.
Yeah.
It's her favorite, too. And we've gone to, I think all of the Saw movies together.
Nice.
But I'm real partial to the first one myself.
The first one was just me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the only one I saw at the movies. I've seen all the others, but you know, on DVD, on the whatever pay per view, whatever. But the first one, because it was. I mean, the twist was great, and it was incredibly well done. I'm a fan of the Saw franchise as well. Definitely. Like the invent. I mean. You know, as it went on, you know, the storyline's got a bit thin, but the sheer inventiveness of the contraption that was fantastic.
I thought it was original.
It was.
I, it held me, you know, really
yeah.
well. So.
Okay,
so, yeah.
Tony, give me one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
One interesting non-writing related fact. That's tough. I'm not that interesting a guy. Non-writing. I've played music semi-professionally since I was in high school, mostly bass guitar.
That's interesting. That's really awesome. And I was going to say nothing we already know, so you couldn't have said firefighter, because that's really interesting too. Bass player, that's awesome. And what is your least favorite part of the writing process?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know that I can pick out something that's least favorite about the process. I don't like it when I can't get it right. And I know that's a very kind of general sounding thing, but I mean, most writers who I've talked to about this, they might not be thinking about the exact same thing I am, but they always agree. Like, oh yeah, I hate that.
Uh-huh.
It's just, for me, it's very frustrating, because when you do feel like you're getting things right, it feels so good. And I don't like putting in the effort and missing out on that feeling.
That's a good answer.
If any of that makes sense, I you know.
Yeah, it does.
No,
it does.
Yeah.
I wanted to.
I think anyone who writes can identify with that one.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be on a roll and just write and write, but you're like, you know, you're just not quite there. Things aren't coming together, and even though you're writing, it's just not, you know.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's when what appears on the page doesn't quite match in your head. That's the frustrating thing. It's like that. I know it's in my head. Just getting it there is difficult. It is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, why do we do this? Why do we torture ourselves?
Well, I hate to say it, Tony, but we are out of time for our first segment. You have to promise to come back when you're finished and read more. We need more. Okay.
Cool. Anytime.
Excellent. So
awesome.
thank you so much for joining us. And we will speak to you again very, very soon.
Okay. Well,
thanks
so much for having me on. You guys are the best.
Yeah, and we love you too. Thank you for joining us. Okay, have a great evening. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
And we will be right back after this.
Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Said there was going to be a quiz experience. So, have you guessed the theme for the music this week?
Oh man, you did tell me there would be a quiz, and you know what?
I told you. I said I messaged you. I said they will pay attention. There will be a quiz.
You did. Is it something about time? Is it no? I have no idea. So yeah, I got nothing. I don't even know. I wasn't even listening to that second song. You know what I was doing? I was panicking because you said, okay, I'm going to bed now. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. So, seriously, I was panicking up until, you started talking. I was thinking, what am I going to say if we come back from break and he's not there? I'm thinking in my head, this is what we call the panic room,
It wouldn't be the same without a bit of panic, would it? Yeah.
No.
you should know me better by now. I could have gone to bed. Actually, I'm shattered. I've had a long day, and so we're not. We're obviously having a broken night's sleep doesn't help. I like my weather app, but I can't figure out how to switch off the notifications. I don't think I'll just no. Oh, hello, dogs come to see me. I just don't think I'm bright enough for that. To be honest, hey, Mikey. He was the dog. He was actually physically shaking this morning because of the thunder. Absolutely terrified, bless him. Yeah, but he's happy now. He's happy puppy now. So Yeah, how are you getting on with all your dogs over there? I know you've got about 9,000 dogs in your house now.
My goodness. Yeah, there's 5 of them. And it's you know, touch and go. I don't know. Sometimes it's okay, and then other times they, you know, the big ones are sweethearts. They really, really are. But they are big, and when they get playing, even though they're puppies, they sound really scary, like terrifying. And you just never know. Are they going to, you know, it's going to be like, you know, really scary or, you know, or whatever. But they're just puppies, so they're just playing. And, of course, then the little ones are, they're the little ones are the snippy ones. The little ones are actually the ones who are going to bite, you know, somebody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they can't really do the damage. And it's just, you know. And then, of course, you got mine, who my dog is the older one. He's, like, probably about 10 years old. He just wants to, you know, take his nap and be left alone.
Just like me,
yeah, exactly.
Just like you, he wants to have a nap. Bless him.
He's my spirit animal, yeah. So it's I don't know. There's a lot of dogs. There were, you know, when you were talking about Star Trek, I was thinking, you know, the two big dogs, their names are Kirk and Spock. That's a little, you know, bit of trivia there.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, no. So I was about to say there weren't any dogs in Star Trek. They should do a doggy version of Star Trek. That'd be great, wouldn't it? But yeah, I'm impressed that they're called Kirk and Spock. I like that.
Yeah. You know, to make it even more interesting, the girl dog, her name was Spock. You know, so.
Excellent.
Right,
Odd. Most of
yeah, it is. I did not name them, so I can't take any responsibility for that. But no, it's like a freaking kennel, I'm telling you. It's, you know, when we leave and then we come, oh, this is pretty funny. We were gone earlier today and we get home and the dogs start barking. It's like a freaking kennel. And we had some things in the car, so I had to go back out to the car to get the things. And, you know, so we you know, get here, and the dogs start going crazy. And, of course, they're in their kennels. And then I go back out to the car, and they just stop barking. They were so confused. Like, normally, you know, we go right over to them and let them out. But this time it was like, you know, we showed up, and then we left again, and they didn't know what to think. It was pretty funny. So I do like messing.
Bless them. Speaking of things not knowing what to think, obviously the Mueller report on Donald Trump and his shenanigans with Russia was published pretty much in its entirety. So those as entire as they're going to publish it. And it all seems a bit smoke and mirrors to me. You know, he seems to have been vindicated, but not. You know, it's like it's just. You know, it's almost like, you know, we know you're not, but we're not being able to nail anything concrete to you. But, yeah, bless you. But again, old Trump trumpet is same old. God, but I must admit, since he made the announcement about windmill wind cancer, I've been worried about that, you know, so, So I tell you, I'm going to, because obviously, you know, we've not had him on the show for a while. I'm going to play my little tribute to Mr. Trump, I think.
Nobody does it better.
I really believe I'd run into even if I didn't have a weapon.
Nobody knows the system better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows. Nobody's better.
Nobody's stronger.
There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me.
Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Nobody's in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump.
Nobody knows that better than me.
Nobody even understands it but me.
Nobody can do it like me.
Which is why I alone can fix it.
I have Ivy League education, smart guy.
I know words. I have the best words.
You like, I'm a smart person.
It's this. It's not my salesmanship.
It's what?
This. You know what that is? It's the brain power.
I'm getting thousands of letters and tweets that I was right about
the whole situation. I mean, I've been right about a lot of things, frankly. I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news.
I watch your stuff. You know, I'm like a guy with vision.
I have an instinct for this kind of thing.
I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war.
In my book, I predicted terrorism.
It's a rigged system. I think I've done a great service by pointing this out. I was the one that really broke the glass ceiling on behalf of women.
I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
Did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history.
You look like a million and a half people.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
That keeps me from running.
Can you believe it?
Nothing. I think in answer to that last question is no, I can't believe it, to be quite honest with you. But, yeah.
I know. You know, I listen to that. Yeah, I listen to that, and I think the bad part is I think he actually believes all of those things he's saying.
I think he does. He does. It's funny if I was having a conversation with a guy just the other day in a professional capacity, I have to say. We were discussing money laundering and crime syndicates and various stock scams, et cetera, as you do. And he said, well, something that Trump actually says on that piece there, you know, well, is a mark of that kind of narcissistic person who gets themselves into a position where they make such a mess, but that only I can fix it, which is how they cling on. Star Trek reference
right.
there, yeah. And he said it, just that quote, you know, it's like the classic narcissist phrase is, I need your help. As soon as somebody says that, I need your help, you know what you're dealing with. Unless I suppose they're drowning, in which case they're drowning. But anywho, it's always nice to wheel out the Donald. And I think I've said this before. For our American listeners, and we have listeners from all over the world, which is jolly. In England, back where I'm from, Trump is actually a euphemism for fart. So every time Donald, seriously, you know, in our house, you know, it's called doing a Donald, which is kind of so, which is why every time Donald Trump is mentioned, Trump Towers and Trump this and Trump that, we just have a little giggle because we're childish and being, it does mean something different over there. But it's like the whole fanny thing. Fanny means something altogether wildly different in England. But yeah, the Trump, which is I always say, which is why we don't think his perfume took off very well in England, because nobody's going to buy for their loved one the great smell of Trump.
No, I wouldn't buy
it. You smell of Trump, which is pretty good. So anyway, just to try and dig the show out of the gutter I've put us in. What have we got coming next? Up next, Maria.
For our second guest, we have crime fiction writer and publisher Tom Vader. Woo!
Good evening, Tom. How are you, sir?
Hello, good evening and good night, and thanks for having me on the show again.
Hello. So you sound like you're about 30,000 miles away. You may put your mouth closer to the mouthpiece on your phone.
I will do. I'm actually on the laptop. Can you hear me better now?
Not quite. You need to get really, really close.
Let me see what I can do.
Good man.
sure how to increase the volume this side. Can you hear me now? Hello.
A little bit better.
Just get your mouth closer to the laptop, and all will be well.
Well, I hope you can hear me now, and thanks for having me on the show again for the second time.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we always say when we have returning guests, I mean, you really should know better, to be honest.
After that song, and after, you know, I'm following the American president on your show, I mean, how can that get any better, you know?
Well, to be fair, it couldn't get any worse than following Donald J, I'm afraid. But
okay, I'll do my best not to be sad then.
Yeah, very, very. I'm the best at everything. Apparently.
Yeah.
Nobody builds walls better than me, he says, but God bless him. So, Tom, I mean, it's been a while since we last spoke. What have you been up to?
Well, it's a beautiful morning in Bangkok today. It's bloody, bloody hot. I think today will be 40 degrees. That's centigrade, not Fahrenheit.
Wow.
You'd have to translate that into a Fahrenheit for me, please. But it's very, very hot.
I'll do that as we speak. Keep talking. I will get that worked out now. I've got an app for that.
As I was last time, I'm still a publisher and a writer. I still am the co-owner of Crime Wave Press. And you just had Tony Knighton on. He published two of books. He's a super fantastic writer from Philadelphia. And I really, really love his most recent novels. His most recent novel that he's put out with us. And besides that, I've got a new novel out called The Monsoon Ghost Image, which is the third part of my Detective Maya series. And actually, it's the last part. So that's just come out in December.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Wow, it's 104 for our American listeners. It's 104 Fahrenheit.
Wow.
To be fair, that's a typical summer's day in Houston. That, to be honest, we've had cold and bad weather recently, but summer is on its way, and we regularly have in the low hundreds. So I know your pain. I know your pain. We're bracing ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, April, May, it's like that here. It's very, very hot. We're all waiting for the rain.
Wow.
Yeah, we usually get a sort of June, July, and into August. It does get bloody hot here as well. So, is it humid? I mean, it tends to be a dry heat here. Do you get the humidity?
Yeah. It's very humid, of course. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, obviously, everybody. I mean, Christina's lived in Florida. She knows all about humidity.
Oh, it was awful. I don't ever want to go back. Yeah, you know, and I lived in Texas as well for a while, and it totally is a way different kind of heat. And I, you know, the humidity stuff, I would never want to do that again. It was just awful. It really was. Yeah.
It does look,
and it's still early in the morning there for you, isn't it, Tom? So it's just going to get hotter, isn't it?
Yeah, in an hour it'll be really, really hot. It's about 10:30 here, 10:30 a.m.
It's just going to get hotter. I suggest you stay indoors and you crank the AC up and drink lots of, I don't know, lemonade or iced tea or something.
Or beer. Or beer. Beer's
beer.
Always good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Well, it is already Friday there, so...
That's right.
So I want to hear more about your book, The Monsoon Ghost Image. And, you know, this one had a tagline, James. If you saw, this one had a tagline. You didn't read it for us, though. I mean, why do I bother?
Well, because you don't usually. I thought I would let you. Yeah, I'd let you read it out. Go on.
Okay, great. Thanks. Dirty Pictures, Secret Wars, and Human Beasts. Detective, who is it, Mayor? Is that it? Is back to investigate the politics of murder. That's awesome.
Ooh, that sounds... everything in there.
I know. I like Dirty Pictures. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I knew the one thing you'd take away from that would be that.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you have an excerpt for us, Tom? A reading?
I'm sorry.
Do you have a reading for us?
Ah, okay. Hang on a second. Yeah, I just wanted to say we can continue on the weather theme because the book is called The Monsoon Ghost Image, of course, and the monsoon will be upon us here in Thailand in about a month's time, and then it'll get slightly cooler but even more sticky.
Yuck. More sticky. That's awful.
Hey, that sounds awful, isn't it? Really painting a really good picture of the area there.
Yes. It was a beautiful day here, I will say. It had a slight breeze, and it maybe hit like 80. It was just gorgeous. Nice, sunny day. I couldn't have wanted better weather. It was beautiful.
You're just showing off because we had a crap day today, weather-wise.
Well, it's supposed to be cold, well, cool tomorrow, and then I think like the high is like 48 on Saturday or something. So, you know, we go from 80 today, and in 2 days it's not even 50, something crazy like that. Yeah,
it's all over the place at the moment. Yeah.
So, you would like me to read the excerpt? Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I should just read the short introduction to the book then, so that you, listeners have a bit of an idea of what the book is actually about.
Okay.
So.
That's all yours.
Does that sound good?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when award-winning German conflict photographer Martin Ritter disappears in a boating accident in Thailand, the nation, that's Germany, of course, mourns the loss of a cultural icon. But a few weeks later, Detective Meyer's agency in Hamburg gets a call from Ritter's wife. Her husband has been seen alive on the streets of Bangkok. So then Meyer decides to travel to Thailand to find Ritter. But all that he finds is trouble and a photograph. And as soon as Meyer puts his hand on the monsoon ghost image, the name of the book's title as well, the detective turns from hunter to hunted. The CIA, international business interests, a doctor with a penchant for mutilation, and a woman who calls herself the wickedest witch of the East all want to get their fingers on Martin Ritter's most important piece of work, a visual proof of a post-9/11 rendition and the torture of a suspected Muslim terrorist on Thai soil. From the concrete canyons to the Thai capital, to the savage jungles and hedonist party islands of southern Thailand, Maya and his sidekick Mikhail race against formidable foes to discover some of our darkest truths and save their lives into the bargain. And so the excerpt I'm going to read is a scene where Detective Maya has arrived on the island of Koh Phangan in southern Thailand, which is famous for its full moon parties. You might have heard of those. And he's still hunting for Martin Ritter, and he's staying with a woman called Hom, who tells him her story, a universal tale of big money interests against small, honest people. So that's the story I'm going to read to you.
Okay, it's all yours.
The chapter is called The House. Much later, they sat on rattan masks on the veranda, a single candle, a mosquito coil, and the remnants of a fiery fish curry between them. May had fallen asleep in the hammock, only her feet visible above the netting that enveloped her. Sorry, the netting. I want to tell you a story, Maya. Before, when you sit here, I went into the room and I looked into your bag, and you have a gun, but you're not police, I think. And you're not a nakleng, a criminal either, I think. So I want to tell you my story. After that, you can stay or go, up to you. You can leave or you can help me, up to you. But you have to listen to my story first, and I need your help, Ka. Maya nodded, from another world altogether. I'm 45 years old. I come from Krung Thep, Bangkok. I was a student in Bangkok in the late 1970s. We had many problems with the military government at that time. So I came down here for time out, and I met a man. Boy. His nickname was Boy, because he looked like a boy. He was a young man from the island. So I fell in love with this boy and I stayed on the island and we married and we built bungalows for tourists. We made a restaurant We sold ganja. We made parties for a few years. And then one day, about 10 years ago, a man came to the island, a farang, a very rich farang who had big company in the U.S. And this man, with some partners in the military, decided to build an airport on Koh Phangan, on my husband's family's land, the land of many other people, and a national park. He offered some money, some compensation, but my husband and I organized with other farmers here, like we did. Like we did in the 70s, we wanted to keep Koh Phangan beautiful. We made demonstrations on our land against the airport. She paused. Maya knew what was coming. The night contracted around them, and the darkness made the candle between them flicker and almost faint. This man, he paid everyone, the mayor, the police, and my husband. One day, 5 years ago, he drowned. Maya saw only sadness in Hom's face. She laughed with bitterness. My husband was a very good swimmer. After a long silence, Maya asked her, "Why are you telling me this? I'm not an assassin. I'm not a killer." She looked at him directly and without pity. "The big man at the boat, he killed my husband. He works for the rich farang. His name is Butke. I think he is looking for you. I am sure." Maya said nothing for a long time. He looked out into the night, uncertain whether to leave this madness or stay. As soon as he escaped one trap, another opened. How could this man have a long connection to an island Maya was visiting to escape from this very same man? It didn't make any sense. He'd spoken to no one in Bangkok, to no one on the bus, and only to Hom on the ferry. And this man, Wutke, appearing at the jetty couldn't be a coincidence. But Maya could not see any logic in what had happened. At least one of the parties looking for him was looking for him in places he'd never been to before he even arrived there. This farang who wants to build the airport, what nationality is he? He's German. Wutke is German. Same as you, Maya. The big man with the money is called Krieger. He's a famous Uyai, a strong man, like a big man. He's in the news here sometimes. He owns many telephone companies, and he has so much money. Same like our Thailand Prime Minister. Rich man and very corrupt. Krieger owns one island not so far from here. It's in a national park, and people say that there are wild animals, a very dangerous animal island. There are tigers and big snakes, and he has a big house with place for a helicopter, a jetty, a speedboat, everything is there. You go there, you don't come back. That's what the Chow Lei, the sea gypsies, say, who travel through the park sometimes. These rich people killed my husband for money. What is it you expect me to do then, Hom? She shrugged at him, a dark look on her face which switched to a bright smile in an instant. Why'd you meet me on the boat, and why did I help you, Mr. Maya? And why is the man who killed my husband looking for you? Maybe it's magic. Maybe it's karma. Maybe it's lucky. Maybe it's not lucky. But you are here, and now, and you, and I don't know how to explain, and my English is not so good. You are just part of the story. I know, I can feel it. Maya nodded. Me too, and I don't like it. So I think you don't come here to help me, but you come for another reason, and maybe now something will change for me. Because I miss my husband very much, and I have so much pain, and I have to hide it from my daughter all the time. And she will never see her father. She was too young. It's very hard. I don't like this rich farang and these local people who only like the money and let the foreigners do what they want in my country, even kill our own people. I want to stop this man building the airport where my husband died. Stop destroying the island. I want to kill Wutke. That is my wish.
Wow. That was really good. Again, it was, I was actually, I'm trying not to actually read while you're reading and stuff. And I get so caught up in the story and I'm like, okay, I have to, look alive so that when he stops, I can say something smart and I just want you to keep reading. that was really good. You are an author and you are, a publisher as well. How do you find the time to write?
My day job is I'm a journalist in my day job, so I write all the time anyway for a living.
Wow.
And so writing novels, and I also write nonfiction books. It's just part of the day. It's one thing together fairly smoothly.
Wow. You know, us writers, we also like to read. Do you get time to read anymore? And if so, who do you like to read?
Yeah, I get time to read. I mean, every time I get on the train here or in a taxi or something, I read. And I read in the evenings a little bit. At the moment, I'm reading some short stories by Raymond Chandler, actually, because just last week I read Poodle Springs, which is a novel of which the first four chapters were written by Raymond Chandler, and then it was finished by someone else. And I didn't really like it, to be honest. And so I thought, oh, I go back to the original Chandler and see how that is in comparison. And the short stories I'm reading are way better, of course.
Yeah, you know, I'm finding that, being involved in the publishing aspect of things, that, you know, I read so much for work that I never have time to read for pleasure anymore. I have so many people, you know, read my book. Did you read my book? I have this one friend who every time I you know, run across him, he's, did you finish my book yet? And no, I didn't. I don't even have time to read stuff that I want to read. I don't know how you find all the time. I really don't. But maybe if I wasn't napping.
I go through phases, I guess, where I read more or less for pleasure. And I travel a lot for my job, so because I'm on the road a lot of the time, that's when I find time to read. And actually, I don't have a smartphone, so that helps as well.
You're not less distractions that way, right?
Yes, because the only time I'm online is when I'm sitting in front of my computer, which is enough time already. But when I'm out there
that's
or doing
true.
Something, then I have no access to the internet, so that forces me to, or it gives me the opportunity to do other stuff like read books, you know.
You know, as I think that, you know, that the whole thing about being addicted to like the internet and stuff and being online, I think that's a real thing. And, you know, just thinking about being cut off, you know, like if my phone were to be shut off or something, I would just freak out. But you know what? After you get through with the initial freak out, it's so peaceful and so quiet. So I kind of envy that, you know. I have gotten to, you know, James was talking about him the app he has, and it, you know, it goes off, you know, all the time or whatever. And you know, I have this thing, I set my phone on do not disturb, and that's amazing because you know, I never used to do that, so now it just doesn't disturb me, which I have to say was a bad thing once because my son was trying to get a hold of me and he couldn't because my phone was set to do not disturb. So, which, yeah, that's his loss, but whatever. He didn't really keep me.
No, it's one of those. I mean, we just start relying on these things now. It's just, you know, it's funny.
Yeah.
Things, like sometimes I put my phone down, and sometimes, you know, you forget where you put it. And you just get this blind panic that you're going to miss something in the 30 seconds it takes you to find your phone. And it is like a physical, palpable panic feeling. It's just like, no, this is wrong. And yeah, I remember back in the good old days, but we didn't have anything, you know. I was out, I was in sales a lot, worked out on the road a lot, and you know, you phoned in the office like one into the office once a day, and that was it. Not now, you 24/7, you're in communication, which I don't think is always a good thing, to be honest with you. I really don't. I couldn't have got up to half of what I got up to then. Now.
Right.
But I would say that it really is a personal choice, and we are, you know, we're obviously being conditioned by ourselves in a way to be online all the time. But I mean, I'm a journalist. I have a phone that makes phone calls and gets text messages, but it's not on the internet, and it's perfectly enough. And when I am at home and I'm working, I'm often online, and then I can check my messages and stuff, but I'm not on WhatsApp or any of those other applications, and I don't need it. And when I go, sometimes I go to very remote places to work where there is no internet. And like last year, I was, I think, 3 weeks in one stretch where there wasn't any internet, and I didn't miss it. But then what I noticed is when I come back to places where there is online connection, I'm in it again straight away without any kind of hesitation, you know.
Well, you know, the funny part about that is that, you know, I will message somebody, and, you know, if they don't respond within, you know, I say reasonable time, but for me that's, you know, 10, 15 minutes.
Not
I'm like,
instantly.
Why are they not, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they're ignoring
me.
You're ignoring. Why are you ignoring me? I know. I'm terrible for that. Terrible for that.
I know, because, you know, I have my phone on me all the time, so I get a message and it pops right up. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I don't have to respond if I don't want to, but I see it, you know. So I guess I just figure everybody else is the same way. And, you know, for all I know, they could be in some remote part of the world. For me,
or
I'm
they,
like, it's been 10 minutes. Where are they?
Yeah. Or they may have a life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. James said earlier that that before there was mobile phones, there was loads more things we could get away with. And I think that the phone, of course, as the cameras in the street are just one more thing that kind of supervises and controls us, and therefore he's completely right. I totally agree with that. And in a way, that's also what my novel, The Monsoon Ghost Image, is about, because it's about one photograph of a scene of the American Service rendition, a high-value prisoner. And in the digital age, where pictures can be very easily replicated, you know, in the old days there would have been a hunt for a negative, and there would have only been one negative and a few prints. But now, basically, you take a photo and it's out there, and it is absolutely unstoppable. And so what James said earlier, that you can't get away with stuff anymore, is true. If you film yourself doing anything these days, and it's of any interest to anybody, it'll be on the internet at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful.
Yeah. I hate to say it, Tom, but we are out of time for our show, and it went by way too fast. And you have to promise to come back and see us.
No problem. So I hope if you're concerned about online privacy, read my book, The Monsoon Ghost Image.
Definitely.
Where can we find that, sir?
You have a website? Yes, there's the Crime Wave Press website. That's www.crimewavepress.com. Or you can come to my website, which is www.tomfarmer.com.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm afraid time has flown by. And it is that time, actually, where we have to say goodnight.
Thank you very much.
Good night,
have a beautiful
day.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Good night. And good night, Christina.
Good night.
My